This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us is Doug Farrar from USA Today. And, of course, here's a chance, Doug, you can plug the book right now.
Oh, yeah, the book. thank you, John. The Genius of Desperation, the Schematic History of Professional Football, now available on Kindle and in paperback, bookstores nationwide, or on Amazon.com.
That's really good. How's the book selling?
It's doing well. It's getting these little blips. There was a nice holiday bump. It was just featured. There was a couple quotes. Bill Connolly did a really nice history of the option play on SB Nation, and that was featured. So it keeps popping up. The reviews have been great, and it's just really good to see.
Okay, so now we're heading into the stretch right now. Where did you have the Seahawks? I think you were pretty positive on them in the preseason and in the offseason. Have they kind of done what you thought they were going to do, or where did you have them?
They did more. I thought this was a rebuild, not like a Mariners rebuild where it takes 26 years, but an actual rebuild where, you know, two or three. I figured them for 6 or 7 wins for the whole season. They would sort of rejigger everything and maybe in 2019 be a real threat. And this is a team that has not only played well this year, they're a couple of plays away from, say, 10-2 instead of 7-5. Mm-hmm. And I think the way they're set up, they're not just set up for a good bounce into 2019. I think they've established themselves as a team that can be very good for a number of years in the future. I mean, you look at the Sheldon Richardson deal, and this came up again this week where the Seahawks apparently lowballed him. They gave up a lot of draft capital to get him. Well, as a pass rusher, based on Pro Football Focus's metrics, Jaron Reed has actually been a more effective pass rusher overall than Sheldon Richardson has. So I think you've got a lot of cases where, you know, Trey Flowers playing outside corner for the first time in his career, doing pretty well. You know, they're trying to figure out the safety position. I think they can establish that in the draft to replace Earl Thomas. Certainly the addition of Mike Solari has paid. I don't know. You know, you do these preseason predictions, and I didn't know if Cable was still there when I made them.
Yeah.
But I think Solari is worth 2 or 3 games alone, just based on how much better the offensive line has played. This team has actually, probably for the first time since 2011, exceeded my expectations. And I think this has a lot to do with when you go back to how, and I've talked to Pete about this, all those years at USC, he had to turn his roster over every 2 years. He had to be ready for the guys who were going out. He had to bring the guys in who were coming in. And that sort of middle tier of players who you have for 1 or 2 years, that's the backbone of your team. And because he did that so successfully for so many years at USC, I think now he looks at, you know, these quick rebuilds in the NFL and just goes, I've done this before. So they have exceeded my expectations in just about every possible way.
Yeah, the weird part is, I mean, they've kind of been exactly what I thought they were, because I mean, the model that I use, and it was something that I did basically see, because if Russell Wilson, if you believe, is a top 5, top 7 quarterback, then I went through to 2008. And the top 7 top tier quarterbacks are ones that there's only 6 instances where they didn't get a winning season or a 500 season, when the quarterback stays there for most of the year. And so the motto I thought is, you know, 23 points or less on defense. They're giving up 21, okay, or 21 or 22. I thought they were going to be able to do that. I thought that they would have the running game, which I didn't think was going to be this good. I thought it was going to be top 13, not top 1. And then I thought Russell, you know, with his ability to get 3 or 4 comeback wins a year, that would get them to 9. And if they got a break, and the break turned out to be the Carolina game, they can get to 10.
Yeah. Well, and going back to, I mean, the run game is certainly, because Pete has always said, and Schottenheimer, I think, agrees, the ideal way for this team to play offense is you run the ball effectively, and you know, you have your short to intermediate passing game as sort of a bailout on pressure down in pressure situations. But really, they want their passing game to be big plays off of play action featured out of the run game. And no, you don't need a run game to do play action, but it helps. And that's really what they're getting. And maybe the most amazing stat I've seen all year You know that 158.3 is the perfect passer rating. Well, when Tyler Lockett is targeted this year, and I don't think we've talked enough in Seattle about what a monster season this kid is having, but when Tyler Lockett is targeted this year, he's good for a 100. He's good for a perfect passer rating. He's got first downs and I believe over half of his receptions. He hasn't dropped a pass. I mean, he's just been amazing. And, you know, they've hit well on so many of these players. And really, the other thing, I mean, we're all saying, well, thank God Mike Solari is here instead of Tom Cable. But the extent to which that offense was broken last year and is functional this year is, it's kind of, I would compare it almost to Jared Goff with Jeff Fisher and then Jared Goff with Sean McVay. It's that much of a drastic difference. And again, these things are not just good for this year and a possible, you know, 6 seed or 5 seed, but really going into the next few years. And I think the people who didn't believe in this rebuild were wondering how long Pete Carroll was going to stick around. I think you look at it now, he'd be crazy to leave.
Oh, no question. Because, I mean, I don't know. It's like if the building can get, because I would have to think that I'm looking more as a Super Bowl type of run would be more 220 than 219. But if they can have two more good off seasons, then I think that that's within reason.
Because, yeah, and I think this year is 2011, maybe into 2012. Maybe next year is 2012 where they lose that playoff game in Atlanta and they come off the field going, okay, next year we have to do it. And, you know, they could have extended the stretch run had they, you know, maybe not made the Percy Harvin trade, maybe not made the Jimmy Graham trade, maybe fired Tom Cable a couple years before, et cetera, et cetera. But really, you know, and it's fascinating because most teams when they rebuild outside of the Patriots, most teams when they rebuild, you get 2 or 3 years where it's really dismal. And this team seems to have avoided that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that that's been, I think, the biggest surprise of all is just how quickly, because I thought this was going to, you know, it was still on paper. You think it'd be a 2 year build around it. I think what most people that didn't look at the team closely said, oh, they go from 8 Pro Bowl guys on defense to 1 or 2. Well, that's going to be 4-win, 5-win team. Well, no, there's guys that are going to be Pro Bowlers. I mean, Frank Clark will be, I think, a Pro Bowler this year. Jaron Reed, I know, is up as much as 9th in the Pro Bowl voting by the fans. You know, he's now not going to make it, but again, maybe he's going to be an alternate, and then we'll see how long it takes for some of the guys in the secondary to kind of warm up and do some things.
And I think, I mean, at times Fluker has played at a Pro Bowl level. I know there is an injury situation there. I think Lockett has absolutely played at a Pro Bowl level. Bobby Wagner, I mean, and that's, I mean, for you to have a successful season, you also need one or two of your players to have these outlier seasons, and Wagner's always been great. Last year, he was one of the few bright spots for a Seattle team that John Schneider said looked like it should have won about 3 games. But this year, I mean, outside of Aaron Donald, you name me a more impactful defensive player. And that's those are the, and Russell Wilson, certainly in the second half of the season, kind of doing that same thing. When you get your rock stars playing at an entirely different level, it just seems to elevate everyone else's game.
Now, what's your thoughts on what's happened to the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, you know, I think when you go back and look at Kirk Cousins in Washington, I think you're seeing that same guy in Minnesota. And people were saying, well, you know, he's got Thielen and Diggs. He's got, you know, a decent offensive line. He's got a great run game. Maybe he'll be better. You know, I think what Kirk Cousins is you've got a guy who came out of Michigan State, drafted in the 4th round, and I think it's emblematic of how hard he works that he has maximized his relatively limited physical abilities. I don't think you get more than what you've seen from him. And this is a guy who struggles with second and third reads, makes some fairly hideous decisions in the red zone historically, and tends to be very inconsistent from game to game. He'll, you know, throw 7 deep passes and for 400 yards, you'll think, oh my God, he's the next whatever. And then they'll have 2 straight games where he just kind of stinks on ice. And I think that's just who he is. And I think if you try and elevate him above that, you're going to get what the Vikings have gotten this year. And due to the contract they gave him, they're going to have it for a few more years. He's not a franchise-defining quarterback. And when you have a really specious offensive line like the Vikings do, when the run game is inconsistent, you know, the receivers are great, But I think the real surprise of the Vikings this year is how their defense, I mean, a lot of blown assignments, a lot of bad coverage in the beginning of the season. They were running basic zone stuff and just getting killed with it. They're running more man and pattern match now, and it's starting to come around. But, you know, the Vikings and the Jaguars, I think, are maybe the two biggest disappointments as far as where most people thought they would be. And I believe Jacksonville's been eliminated from the playoffs. Vikings are not in that situation, but certainly I think we all expected more from them.
Oh yeah.
Now,
no question.
Can they go on a hot run with a great coach like Mike Zimmer? Absolutely. This is a really tough way to start that prospect.
Oh, no question. And again, it's kind of surprising that I didn't think they'd be 6-5-1, that's for sure, and a chance to be 6-6-1. And the one thing that's kind of weird about Mike Zimmer is that he has such a bad record against playoff teams. And you would think with the way that he coaches, the style, and in fact, that may be something to study too, is that the combination of where defensive coaches are compared to everybody else. Because, I mean, you have defensive coaches, you got 14 offensive head coaches that call their plays, and, it's a different type of order right now. It's so different as far as the strategy.
Well, and with defensive coaches, I mean, it's such an offensive game now, as it is in Seattle when Carroll put his faith in Schottenheimer. Didn't look good at first, and now it's starting to really pay off. It's funny that the Troika, the brain trust in Philadelphia, the only person that seems to have worked out for is Frank Reich, except the Colts got shut out by the Jaguars 6-0 last week. But John DeFilippo, I don't know if maybe he's ready for the entire responsibility of designing an offense. That may take a couple of years. And that's another thing. When you're a defensive coach, and this was true, it's true on the other side. Andy Reid and Mike Holmgren, guys like that, offensive coaches, they say, here's your defense, just make it happen. I'm going to be over here designing whatever. And it's not a myopic point of view. You hire that guy and you expect it to pay dividends. I think the downshift from Pat Shurmur to John DeFilippo so far has been fairly stark. I think Case Keenum looked better in that offense last year than Kirk Cousins does this year. And that's something they're going to have to work out over the next couple of years. And maybe this just isn't the year to do that. Maybe they're having a an unexpectedly transitional year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. It's going to be – that's interesting. What trends are you picking up? Because, again, there's so much going on right now with the fact that you've got so many shifting type of offenses. And what I'm wondering is, when you have teams like Chicago and Kansas City that rely so much on motion, how are they affected by the weather conditions when they're cold?
That's an interesting question. I haven't really studied that. I think if you're doing, simple run motion stuff, if you're, because big plays off play action, getting your receivers downfield against cornerbacks, if you're pulling guards, I mean, the offense knows what the offense is going to do. The defense has to react. And if you're stuck in a weather quagmire that can take can up the reaction time to an adverse effect on your defense, and that can certainly be a problem. I think with the Chiefs, and with the Bears, it obviously depends. It depends on if Trubisky can play as he had before he was hurt. I think with the Chiefs, they just have it so dialed in, I'm not sure how much it matters.
No, they really are. But now they're going to be affected by two things. Now, Sammy Watkins is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. I think he's overrated. I don't think he's anywhere close. I don't even think he's their best receiver. But he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks.
He's been a minor factor.
Yeah, yeah. But then also the big impact of Kareem Hunt not being there.
It's a big deal. And, they can lean more on Kelsey. They can lean more on their other receivers. They have decent backs. I would love to see them go after a guy like Jalen Richard in Oakland, who's not utilized as well as he could be. He's that type of back. They need a Kareem Hunt in their offense, just as the Saints need an Alvin Kamara, just as the old 49ers needed Roger Craig, or the Rams needed Marshall Faulk. They need that guy. Andy Reid is unquestionably smart enough to game plan around it. And I don't think it'll be, because you still have Tyreek Hill.
Right.
You still have double and triple option plays that can confuse most defenses. And, now, of course, they're going, the third thing is they're going up against Baltimore, and that's the most, I don't know if it's statistically the best defense. I know it is the most sound from play to play. Probably the fewest blown assignments of any defense you'll see from week to week. They're not, they don't do anything like incredibly well, but they do everything at an above average level. And in today's NFL, any defense that can do that will give you problems.
No doubt. And that's going to be good. It's going to be interesting to see, how do you look at it? Let's look at a couple games right now. Rams against Chicago. How do you see that one going?
Really fascinating. I did an underrated list for offensive and defensive players, and I had like three Bears on defense. Akeem Hicks, who was Chicago's best defensive lineman before they traded for Khalil Mack. Really interested to see how Chicago's defensive line goes up against the Rams' offensive line. Because Jared Goff, as good as he's been, can still be affected by pressure. And this Bears team can bring it. And Vic Fangio doesn't throw a lot of different schematic stuff at you, but it's very fundamentally sound. Players in the right places. Eddie Jackson has 5 defensive touchdowns in the last 2 years. No other player has 2 or more than 2. So this defense may be playing at a higher level than even the Rams' offense is. For the Bears, you want to see them get their run game going because that's the one issue that the Rams have had all year is a run defense. It'll be interesting to see now that Tlaib is apparently off his pitch count and he can really cover the number one receivers, which Marcus Peters was not doing well at all. If they can get their secondary kind of together, then that could pose a problem for the Bears. But, yeah, that's certainly it's an anticipated matchup and for very good reason.
Oh, no doubt. What about the game between Philadelphia and Dallas?
You know, it's funny. It's like I was saying, DeFilippo going to Minneapolis and Wright going to Indianapolis and Peterson staying put and hiring Groh. I really, you know, this Philadelphia offense seems stuck in the mud. Dallas's defense is playing at an incredibly high level, especially their secondary. And I think that's, if Philadelphia cannot crack Dallas's defensive code, and by the way, I think this is one more merit badge for Chris Richard on his way to getting a head coaching position because he helps Rod Marinelli out a lot. If Philadelphia can't solve Dallas's defense, and based on what I've seen this year, I'm not sure they can, this could get out of control pretty quickly.
Yeah, no question about it. And what about the Monday night game between Seattle and Minnesota?
You know, even if this were on a neutral field, I think the Vikings are figuring things out on defense, but the Seahawks come in with too many ways to create explosive plays, and I'm just not, you know, against a defense that's really coming together on the road. I can't say I'm a big believer in Kirk Cousins at all. I think it'd be close. Mike Zimmer has ways of making games close, but I think the Seahawks pull this off. They go to 8-5, and they keep surprising everybody.
I know. Pretty amazing. And again, give us a plug for the book.
Yeah, The Genius of Desperation, The Schematic History of Professional Football from 1920 to the Present, from Triumph Books, available in bookstores nationwide and on Amazon.com and all other internet booksellers.
And what about on USA Today?
I have my all underrated and offensive and defensive teams this week, and getting ready to write about the games tomorrow and some more All-22 stuff like I do every week.
There you go. Doug Farrar, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet in Seattle. Hey, Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
You doing well. How are you doing?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something, John. I was interested in your conversation with Doug Farrar. I really enjoyed it. When you started to compare the offensive and defensive-minded coaches in the NFL and their mm-hmm. success rates and the different styles and whatnot, because not just was it interesting, but I also have an interest in a team that may have an interest in a new coach next year.
Right.
So I found the comparisons somewhat interesting. How about Darren Lee?
Unbelievable. And it just came out of the blue, just substance.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a performance enhancement, it's a substance abuse issue, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think he has any prior suspension, if I recall correctly.
There is not. If there was, it'd be longer than four games.
Right. So, but this has to be what, like illegal drugs?
Yeah, it has to be some kind of drug-related or alcohol-related, more drug-related than it would be anything else. Nobody's.
Well, how would it be alcohol-related if he doesn't have any priors and there was no actual alcohol offense?
Yeah,
if you will.
That's why I think it's more drug-related.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
You kind of, I mean, the first thing you think about in a situation like that would be marijuana.
Yep, yeah, that's kind of what popped into my head, but it's too bad. How has he been
playing?
It's stupid, quite frankly, but... You know, he has been prone to immaturity, and, you know, he's been slow to develop, but he's been developing a little bit this year. There's been some signs of improvement, but he's still not where he needs to be, especially after 3 years. But he's really, you know, cut his nose to spite his face because, you know, his next year's contract is not guaranteed now because of the suspension. Right. And, you know, if the Jets want to part ways, I mean, you know, this is not a bad way or time to do it. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're going to retool to a 4-3, perhaps, with a new regime.
Right.
So he's really, I think, screwed himself in several different ways, in addition to, you know, making just an additional mess of the team.
Oh, just ridiculous. And again, just lack of – that's the one thing with this team. There seems to be such a lack of accountability.
It's a lack of discipline.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking one thing that struck me was when Doug was talking, and he mentioned a couple of different defensive teams, one of which that stuck with me was the Bears because the Jets played the Bears. And he was saying, you know, Foggio doesn't really have, you know, these really, you know, highfalutin, you know, real fancy defensive schemes, you know, a la Rex Ryan. But he says they just play good, you know, solid defense, and everybody is technically sound, knows their roles, plays their roles. And, you know, really, John, that's all you really need to do. At least for starters.
Right.
And you can put a little creativity and a few wrinkles here and there, but just play fundamental defense.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have we heard in the last 4 years, and especially, you know, just in the last few weeks, and we're getting to the second half of the season, we're getting to the last quarter of the season, and all I hear is Todd Bowles, that was a blown assignment. That was a blown assignment. Guys aren't staying in their lanes. That was a blown assignment. You know, geez, John, that's been 4 years. And, you know, in the second half of the year, there's just no excuse for that.
Right.
And you can't fire all the players, you know. So at some point, you got to hang something like that on the coaching staff.
And to me, that
really stuck with me when he was talking about that. And I was thinking about the Jets, and you know, how many times it's a blown assignment. It's a blown assignment. Well, you know, the second half of the season, that just doesn't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's just been too consistent. And did you see the Titan game? Oh, by the way, you asked how I was doing, John. I got to tell you. I'm really, really bummed because the Titans win on Thursday. It's now official. The Jets have been eliminated from the playoffs.
I know, and you were so surprised about that.
Shocking. You know, I really thought that they had a chance. They ran the table, you know, and we just relaxed, let them run the table, you know, and they had a chance. But, you know, now it's mathematically impossible, and I got to tell you, it really just, you know, I was crushed.
It's just going to tear you up.
I don't know, John. I don't know what's going to cheer me up at this point. I really, and I hate to say this, but for the first time, you know, since like 19, well, there have been a few times, but you haven't followed the Jets since 72, man. And at this point, I really have kind of lost interest in tracking the rest of the season. And for me, that's really hard to do because, you know, I stuck with some bad football over these 40-some years, but I'm just so fed up with the situation, and it's just not going to improve. And even trying to watch various players and see how they respond or whatnot, you know, for next year and whatnot, a scouting kind of situation, it's like I almost have no interest in that anymore either. It's really gotten that bad.
Wow.
It's just a waste of time, you know. And especially if they're not going to play Darnold. But even if they do, I mean, the kid's going to be running for his life. So I don't know, you know, you say, okay, it's good to get reps, but you know, that's like sitting there saying dodging bullets. Well, it's good that you're out there, but you're dodging bullets.
Yeah.
So how
if you were the owner of the team, how would you sort it out? I mean, clearly I think we all know there's going to be a change in coach, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what about the GM?
I think that's I think the die has been cast for Bowles. I think the question now becomes, yeah, what do you do with McKagan?
Right.
And do you ride with him and ride with his vision? But, you know, it's spotty at best. I mean, he's done a nice job trying to restock the roster with, you know, second contract free agents. And he's made some really good moves there. But, you know, his drafting, and again, Darren Lee is another one. This is a first-round pick.
Right.
You know, and it was questionable when they chose him because he was small. And I still don't quite understand why Bowles insists on keeping him in the middle. And so I think that's a tougher question for me. I think I like a lot of the things that McKagan has done. He's done himself well manipulating the draft to get himself in positions of taking good players. But he also, a lot of his, you know, mid to late round picks, a lot of them haven't stuck. And we've talked about this before, but where I really have fallen off the bandwagon as far as drafting goes with McKagan, okay, we spent a draft capital on Tardarius Stewart and Chad Hansen, okay? We really could use two wide receivers this year to help this club. But neither one of them are on an NFL roster right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he do or trade to manipulate for that? He basically gave up his pick to Minnesota for Elfline, a starting center that's a plug-and-play for 10 years, which they desperately needed a center, but they thought that they were going to go with that clown from Tennessee who just wasn't a NFL center, and they still have a center, you know? So it's stuff like that that leads me to question. Another thing, he picked two defensive tackles again for a 3-4 defense. I mean, come on. This year's coming up draft, is loaded with defensive linemen. I mean, where was the forethought there? So I'm a little perplexed by a lot of it, but I am still going to say I am kind of willing to ride with McKagan at this point in time. And I also think part of it is the structure that they currently have with both Bowles and McKagan being equal. I think if you put McKagan in charge as a GM should be in charge and hold him accountable, let's see what happens and go forward with that. I may be willing to ride with that. But, you know, otherwise, I mean, you can't fire the whole team. So, but what do you do? What do you think? You keep McKagan?
I think you keep McKagan. I mean, I think there's too much change, and you need some kind of continuity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what kind of coach they'd be able to get, but I think that, you know, you got to make sure that you make some kind of a change, but don't make it too drastic. You know, unfortunately, you wonder, is Todd Bowles going to go out to Arizona to replace Steve Wilks? That could be a possibility. But in the end, there's got to be some change somewhere.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And then I'm concerned that, I mean, once again, you're going to be turning over an offensive coordinator for it'll be 4 and 5 years.
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, it'll be Darnold second. So that's not good, but it's not awful.
Right.
But I think, you know, I just get the sense, John, that Bowles and McKagan are not on the same page and
Agreed.
Have never been on the same page. And I think that's been an ongoing problem. Again, for example, he keeps drafting defensive tackles, but yet Bowles keeps rolling out a 3-4 defense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they still have a freaking nose guard. And again, they haven't had a nose guard really since Sione Puola, or maybe you could say Snacks was a nose guard of sorts. But they continue to play a 3-4. You know, it's like there's just not that mesh there. So I'm wondering, and also I don't know if you keep the GM and keep some level of continuity, that would be more inducive for somebody to come in and want to take the job as opposed to clean house yet again. And I guess that depends on the personality of the coach. But yeah, like you said, like who would come to? I mean, it'd be great. I'd like to see McCarthy go there.
Yeah.
You know, I just
don't think he's a New York type of guy. I mean, he's more of a Pittsburgh type of guy. So
and
I think
that's why you sit there and think, okay, you got two young quarterbacks in Cleveland and mm-hmm. in New York. All right, Cleveland has a better infrastructure than the New York offense, clearly. But if you're McCarthy, you know, coming from Green Bay and given his kind of finished skin, if you will, where would you rather go? You know, I'd see him rather going to Cleveland than New York.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, I hope they bring in somebody offensive-minded because you need to, I think you got to, this team now has to focus, this franchise has to focus on Darnold. You know, we've gone through the defensive coaches for what? Basically the better part of 20 years at this stage, and it hasn't worked. You know, but now you've got a legitimate quarterback prospect I think you've got to play to what you got, and I think you go offense at this point.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
All right, take care, John. Have a good week.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Ben. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Pretty good. How you doing, John?
Doing good.
Hey, longtime Seahawks fan, so I'm not a 12.
Okay.
I tried to get on the show the other day, so our Legion of Boom was our old defense. What do you think of the Band of Brothers?
Not a bad one. I mean, they can run that up the flagpole. That's not too bad.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, being in the military community and having the two Shaq brothers, Shaq and Shaquille, on there.
Right.
And just the next man up mentality kind of works for this franchise.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is a group that works well together. I mean, I think you can see a lot of continuity there, so that's not a bad one.
Okay, let's get into it. Why did Minnesota give up on Case Keenum?
They thought that Kirk Cousins was going to be better. I think that they looked at the fact that he can go 4,000 yards most every year. The fact that he's been to a couple playoff games, although he hasn't won. I think that was kind of their thinking on it. And then they realized it's like, okay, Case can get you to a certain level. They thought Kirk can get him to another level, but so far they haven't been right. I mean, Case right now, you can make the case that he took last year's team deeper than what this team's going to be.
Well, I think he's a new kind of quarterback. I really think they made a mistake. I followed Kirk Cousins, coming out of, Michigan State, right?
Yes.
And right. He was a great quarterback. I think the Redskins have ruined him, I mean, just with that style, their play, not protecting the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect this game could be a blowout for the Seahawks, and it could be the demise of the Minnesota Vikings, I think. They had their franchise quarterback, and I think they gave up on him.
But honestly, when you look at Case Keenum, Case has had a worse season in Denver than what Kirk has had here in Minnesota.
I think in pro football these days, it seems to be not what you do when the play goes right and everything's perfect. I think in Russell Wilson, who showed us in Seattle, is what do you do when the play breaks down? A guy misses a tackle, wide receiver falls down. Now your whole play is gone. What do?
Mm-hmm.
You just throw the ball away? I don't think so. You try to attack, and I just think they gave up, John. So that's all I wanted to say, and go Hawks.
Okay. Hey, Ben, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show.
Well, thank you.
All right. Hey, a couple quick questions. John, what's your take of the slot receiver who's going to be filling in for Sanders? Name is Hamilton.
Hamilton. Yeah, I like him. I mean, honestly, the thing that impressed me about seeing Denver, the times that I've been able to see him, is this rookie class. I mean, from Bradley Chubb to the two receivers, because Hamilton looks good. And remember, Hamilton was the one that Vance Joseph kept on going over to the guys and saying, we got to get him on the field more. And so I know when they brought that up, and that didn't go over well with Demaryius Thomas. Demaryius was complaining about that, and so they got him on the field. Sutton looks good. I mean, Lindsley looks sensational. Royce Freeman's a good running back. And so that, I think they had a great draft. So that was the impressive thing. And, so now with Sanders going down, they're going with two rookie, actually almost an entire rookie group out there. And so, no, I think it looks good.
Yeah, I know they have a lot of talent, young talent. I just didn't know the way Sanders was performing this year, if Hamilton was going to be able to replace some of his production.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't know about you, but I went through a bunch of research on 31, 32-year-old wide receivers, and you know how disappointing Sanders was last year. I thought that he was going to continue that drop-off, and then all of a sudden he gets targeted like crazy and has such good numbers, but then I didn't think that was going to happen this year, but it did.
Yeah, no. They've made an effort to get him the ball constantly, so he's been pretty able to produce, except for the last couple of games he slowed down some. Does Richard Sherman play one side of the ball, or does he follow the wide receiver?
No, he plays the left side.
Okay, so they'll be able to get Sutton clear of him if they need to try to hit deep?
Mm-hmm. Well, in other words, I mean, Sutton will be on the right side, and so far I think Sherman's only been thrown on – well, he only got thrown on like one or two times last week, 31 times with 17 completions in 10 games.
Okay. And then, hey, what's your thought on Denver losing Chris Harris? I know he was their best cornerback.
That hurt. I mean, to lose Harris and Sanders at the same time has to have a little bit of a fall off because, you know, that one I think hurt because he's their best cornerback, and that means Roby is like the next guy up as far as being number one, and I think he's more of a number three than a number, not even a number two.
Yeah, definitely. And then one last question, John. Keenum, beginning the season, very flaky, very questionable, not making great decisions, underthrowing balls, overthrowing balls, not put in the right spot. Last three games, he's cut back on most of his bad decision-making. He hasn't made the turnovers, and that's been the big difference on this winning streak. Even though I know they're not attempting 30, 40 passes a game, as long as they keep running, I think they have a good chance to take the whole the rest of the season, and Vance Joseph not losing his job.
Yeah, I'm starting to see that too. I mean, really, I think, and it was funny when I was at the Charger game and I was talking to some of the people in Denver, what they were saying is that, you know, you can see on the practice field that there was improvement. They just didn't carry it to the field, and that's when they're sitting at 3-6. Well, you know, and they flipped a switch in what should have been a blowout to the Chargers, and they started coming on in that game, and that turned their season around. Now, I guess what you see on the practice field is what you're seeing on the regular field, and that's encouraging. And, you know, you figure that they should be able to beat San Francisco to go 7-6. So they're in this race. I still think Baltimore has the best chance to at least get that last playoff spot, but at least Denver's in the hunt.
Yeah. Hey, any series coming up, John?
I actually did it last night.
Wait, oh, what time?
5 to 9. I was on from 5 to 9 on late hits.
Oh, I gave up after.
Yeah, they wanted me to do Monday on Moving the Chains, but there's this football game that I have to be at, Minnesota, Seattle, so I couldn't do it Monday.
And you'll be doing the sideline on that, or are you just doing your regular?
I'll be doing the sideline on the Seahawk broadcast.
All right, John. Hey, you take care, bud. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks for Matt Nelson for producing the show. Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Cody. Hey, Cody, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Good. Just trying to settle the debate between me and my friend who's an obnoxious Bronco fan. Trying to settle the debate of the Saquon Barkley and Philip Lindsay. Who deserves Offensive Rookie of the Year? I know Philip Lindsay has had less touches and has done more with the opportunities been given, but I also think that they have a more functional line and that his skill set is more of just speed, running through the hole, hitting it hard, and he doesn't have as many skills as Saquon Barkley. So I just wanted to get your thought on that.
It is going to end up being Barkley because, again, with his pass catches and everything else, the fact he's in the New York market, I know that the Broncos have a better record, but I think it's going to go to Barkley.
Yeah, and who do you think wins the Defensive Rookie of the Year?
That's wide open. I mean, I think Chubb does have a chance. I mean, Derwin James has a chance. This is one of the better rookie groups that I can ever imagine, and so I think that could turn. But you know how it always goes. If you get a pass rush guy, whether it's a D end or a linebacker that gets more than 10 sacks, he usually ends up being the favorite. So if Chubb keeps on finishing the season and getting more sacks, then I think that he might be able to steal it away.
Right. And then one last question, personal question. I'm trying to find a gift for my grandma for Christmas. You got any suggestions?
I don't know what your grandma, what is she like? I mean, what is
she she likes to cook. So I was thinking some dishware, but I'm stuck. I don't know.
I'm at a loss too. I'd say the dishware would be fine, or you know, maybe finding a way to treat her to, you know, a lot of good food someplace somehow. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yep. I might get her a candle or two too. I she's one I don't know who to buy for, but. Yeah. Thanks, John, and I hope you have a good weekend, man.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Seahawk Sal. Sal, how you been?
I'm doing great. Merry Christmas, you old funk master. How you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
Great. Hey, listen, I wrote a note down from the San Francisco-Seattle game, and I had to check out who was doing the color on that. It was Mark Schlereth,
correct.
Do you know what he said at the 6:40 mark of the first quarter?
What?
You should check it out. It'll blow your mind away. He was talking about Bobby Wagner, and he was talking about how Bobby Wagner was reading the eyes of the quarterback and that he was going to pick one off and run it back. No kidding, man. I had to go back and watch it.
That's pretty good.
He said that, and then in the fourth quarter, he had that beautiful 98. And so I don't know if you know him. But
oh, no, I had him on the show last week.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought he was on there. So you tell him that Seahawk Sal thinks he's a guru.
No, he's really good. Good friend, yeah. Good guy. He's on our sister station in the mornings in Denver.
Uh-huh.
On Morning Drive.
Like I said, that just blew me away. And I'm glad I DVR'd the game because I had to go back and check that out. But, hey, John, as always, I'm always listening. I'm just busy with work, so... Just glad to hear you every weekday and on Saturdays, man. And Merry
Christmas
to you.
Thank you so much.
All right.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Wrapping up the show here. Kind of time for maybe a quick call if you get a chance, but come back here. And, of course, heading off to Kansas City. Hoping everything's going to be on the flight. I know my flight left a little bit late, so I'm hoping that it's going to be a real tight connection. So we'll see how that goes. But overall, it's going to be a fun one. And, of course, really looking forward to seeing this game coming up because, again, Baltimore comes in with a real good defense. You've got a real good game plan that I know that Andy Reid's going to put out there. We'll see how he schemes around not having Kareem Hunt. You know, he also now doesn't have his real good one out there. So, again, we thank everybody, and we'll be back on Monday at 10. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.